Genesis chapter 39 is where we are this evening. So we're going to be back in the life of Joseph, which we took a break from last week. So this starts an interesting series of chapters. And before we start Genesis 31, when you think about the, just to bring you back up to date, when you think about the chronology of the events in Joseph's life, sometimes the events of the Bible go by so quickly, you don't realize the amount of time that actually does go by, because you're reading things zip by in a matter of just a few verses, and it doesn't seem like any time has passed. So to put things in perspective as we go through this chapter and then through the next couple, Joseph was 17 years old, according to the Bible, when he was sold by his brothers. We found that out in Genesis 37:2. These are the generations of Jacob, Joseph being 17 years old. So that's when he was out feeding the flock, and he was sent by Jacob to check upon his brothers. So then, of course, as I'm sure you're familiar, he will eventually become very important in Egypt and hold the second highest office, just under Pharaoh. And we're not going to get to that point this evening, but it takes a while. That doesn't just happen overnight. Although it happens rather quickly in the Bible, it takes a number of years in real time in the real life of Joseph. When he is elevated to that position, he's 30 years old, which is still young, but that's 13 years that it takes from the time he is sold by his brothers and taken to Egypt to the time that he is elevated to that position under Pharaoh. We know that from in Genesis 41:46, Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. And Joseph was 30 years old at that time. So that's Genesis 41:46. And that 2 years, we also know that 2 years had passed since the time that the chief cupbearer was restored to his position. Of course, the chief cupbearer was one that Joseph will meet there in prison. And that in the beginning of Genesis chapter 41, and that in verse 1, it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. So that leaves 11 years that Joseph was either serving in Potiphar's house or in prison. So it didn't happen overnight. It did not happen overnight, Joseph's rise to really rise to power. So I want you to be aware of that it took Joseph time. Oftentimes we read about these things in the Bible and we think, wow, that was really fast. And because you don't have anything to compare it to. And you think, well, Joseph, went to Potiphar's house and this happened and that happened, and he went to prison, and then the next day he was in the office of Pharaoh, and within a week all that stuff happened. Well, that's not exactly the way it was. So it all took time, and it was in God's good time the whole time. He was a lot of things were going on. So keep all that in mind as we go through these next few chapters. So as we start in Genesis 39, Joseph does prosper in all that he does, though. Unlike a lot of people that we've run into throughout the book of Genesis, Joseph is a singularity in the Bible. He's a singularity in the book of Genesis. He prospers in all that he does. And he was a shepherd, of course, as he was growing up with his father, Jacob. And we have to kind of fill in the blanks. So some of the things we have to make assumptions. And he was probably, when he was taken to Potiphar's house, probably placed in the fields or some type of position such as that. Potiphar was a powerful man. He was captain of the guard for Pharaoh. And he was a powerful man, and so probably given a position of something that he knew, but God was with him and made him to prosper in that which he was placed in. So as you read the first few verses, Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down hither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So, one of the things that I find interesting in the just right off the bat in the first few verses is the very concept of prospering. That Joseph is made to be prosperous, even as someone who is a servant. He might as well say a slave, because he's been bought by Potiphar, and he is a purchased slave. And but yet the Bible says that he is made to prosper. Our concept of being prosperous is to gain wealth or power or abundance of material goods, and yet what Joseph is doing isn't bringing anything to him. It's everything that he is doing is bringing more abundance to Potiphar, the master. So Joseph isn't prospering material-wise or wealth-wise or anything like that. Only thing that's happening for Joseph is that, fortunately, his master Potiphar is noticing that whatever he does, in fact, he does well. And those things which he does, there's an increase. So if he's putting whatever he's put in charge of, those things all turn out very well. And so he moves up in the ranks of importance and overseeing more things and more things. So in the course of time, then Joseph is placed in charge of everything other than what Potiphar is going to have to eat for dinner that night, and of course his wife. So Joseph has no authority over the realm of his wife and what she's doing, but you have to figure that Joseph did have administrative skills. When he was placed in charge of his brothers, he learned those administrative skills, and so it was just a natural thing for Potiphar to put him in charge of the household, and it wouldn't have been anything for Joseph just to step in and administer the day-to-day running of the household. And of course, with Potiphar, he was a rich man. There were various duties and numerous servants, so. Joseph was able to oversee all the servants and make sure all the duties and various jobs got done. And I'm sure he did them all very well. As you find in verse 4, Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him and made him overseer of his house, and all that he had was put in his hand. And it came to pass, from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. So Potiphar trusted Joseph with everything. He didn't even bother to count and look and see what he had. So what that suggests again I say, you don't necessarily realize the concept of passing time. But here's a relationship between Potiphar, the master of the house, and Joseph, the servant. Over the course of time, Potiphar learned that Joseph was so good at what he did and was a person that could be trusted. We've all been employees to work for people. Maybe you've had people that worked under you and you've given responsibilities to. And over the course of time, you find out that there are people that, no matter what responsibilities they had, they just went ahead and did it. And you never had to watch what they did. Or maybe you were that type of person that your boss just never had to look to check on your work. This is that kind of person. Joseph was just the kind of person who always got the job done. Potiphar never had to check. Potiphar never checked to see what he had or what he didn't have. What his status of his wealth was. What was in the cupboard. What was how many sheep were in the field or any of those type of things. He left it all to Joseph. The only thing he was concerned with was there dinner on the plate when I got home. Because he knew that everything was in the best of hands. That's how much trust he placed in Joseph. And that kind of relationship is built over the course of time. So that's the passage of time that was going on. And that's why I started with this business. So it took a lot of time for Joseph to get to the position he finally got to as second in command over all of Egypt. So that trust was well deserved, and it took a while for that to happen. Now, the second part of verse 6 goes on to say, "And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." Now, that's interesting, that description. What it means is he was a handsome guy, sort of like Mike and Thurman here, both good-looking guys, well-favored. In other words, he was a guy that the women would have naturally liked, and that type of person. So, what happened was that, and over the course of time, as he rose through the ranks of power in Potiphar's house, he, of course, got noticed. He was like his mom. If you look at Genesis 29, verse 7, by the way, the language is not language we use. You don't say that someone's goodly and well-favored. But Leah was tender-eyed, if you remember that description of her. But Rachel, that was Joseph's mom, she was beautiful and well-favored. Beautiful and well-favored. So if you want to use that description, beautiful and well-favored, if you can imagine a girl being beautiful and well-favored, having the right proportions about her, I suppose, is what you might say. Well, Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. Well, he had the right proportions for a man, so he was a good-looking guy, just as his mom was a good-looking girl. So he got the right genes from her side of the family. So, at any rate, Potiphar's wife, she enters the picture here. Now, she's never mentioned. We don't know her name. It's one of those things sort of like Judah's wife. We never found out her name either. It's one of those things where in the course of the story, it just didn't make any difference. Better to leave just as an unnamed person, I guess is what you might say. But Potiphar's wife, who we never find out her name, she notices Joseph. Now, Joseph had been around for quite a while by this time. And the fact of the matter is, it's not that he became better looking. It's not that he was able to do more or anything else. He wasn't around the house more. The fact of the matter is this, She was one of those women who was attracted to power. And as Joseph rose to the ranks of power in Potiphar's house, in her husband's house, well, that's what turned her crank. And Joseph, of course, being a good-looking guy and being now powerful in her husband's house, well, she decided she had to have him. And it came to pass, verse 7, after these things, well, these things being Joseph's rise to power in Potiphar's house, well, that her master's wife, his master's wife, cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." Well, when you think about it, that same kind of temptation was the kind of temptation that Adam and Eve had. Adam and Eve had the free reign of the Garden of Eden, did they not? All except for one thing, which of course is that forbidden fruit, the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Here's Joseph, and he has free reign of everything in Potiphar's house, and all the wealth and all the power and all the servants and everything that Potiphar has. He can do with as he wishes. The only thing that's there that he doesn't have free reign over and can't touch is the wife. And just like that fruit that Adam and Eve weren't supposed to eat, weren't supposed to do anything with, it wasn't a problem until, of course, the fruit didn't actively pursue them, but there was an active temptation going on. The devil actively pursued them to get them to partake of the fruit. Well, the presence of Potiphar's wife wasn't a problem until she started actively pursuing Joseph. So there is a real parallel here between the Garden of Eden and Potiphar's wife actively pursuing Joseph. So you can see the parallel between the two. But the difference being, while Adam and Eve did in fact partake of that fruit, Joseph refused. In verse 8, he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is in me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So he brings two arguments. First of all, it would be betraying not only his master Potiphar, but also it would be sinning against God by committing adultery. So, thinking those two arguments would be enough to convince Potiphar's wife, certainly that would be good enough for most, but unfortunately it was not good enough for her. The wife continues to pursue Joseph to join in her lust. And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. Remember always that her lust was for Jacob, for Joseph. And Joseph is each and every day trying to avoid this woman. If you can just imagine going to work, having to appear in any situation on a daily basis, and knowing that showing up there, you are going to be pursued by someone who is trying to make sexual advances on you, and that you unwanted sexual advances. What kind of, just think of the horrible pressure that it would be for you each and every day before you even arrived where you were going. Put yourself in Jacob's shoes before he arrived at Potiphar's house, before he got up in the morning. knowing that his wife was going to just hound him every day, every day, every day. You know, come lie with me, you know, and just follow him around like a puppy dog. And what would you do? You're trying to hide from her. You're trying to run from her. You're trying to avoid her. You're doing everything you possibly can. It's a bad situation. It's a bad situation. And the worst part of it is that her lust is just overwhelming. You know that the other servants in the house are aware of what's going on. Because there are other servants. There's other men, there's other women in the house as servants. They have to be aware of what's going on. Joseph no doubt wouldn't say anything, but that kind of thing has to be seen by others. If it's repeated often enough, sooner or later, someone's going to see it, someone's going to hear it, and that kind of thing, you know how people talk. So everybody knows sooner or later what's going on. This woman, of course, wants Jacob to join in. She's lusting after him and wants Jacob, or not Jacob, but Joseph, to respond to her lust. Why is that? Well, as Paul explains in Romans chapter 1, sin is never happy alone. Whatever sin it is, people are always the happiest when they have company with their sin. If they get someone else to help them sin, to sin along with them, they're always more happy. Because someone else who partakes of the same sin justifies the sin. In other words, if someone else is doing it, it can't be all that bad. That's the justification. Romans 1:28, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. Certainly she had a reprobate mind concerning lust and Joseph. She probably was thinking about him all the time. Joseph's response was, sin, that this was a great wickedness and it was a sin against God. So she had been warned, she had been told exactly what it was that she was thinking about. Did it stop her? Absolutely no. So verse 32, Paul says, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit things, such things are worthy of death, not only do they do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. In other words, she would be happy to justify the fact that she is lusting after him, having him lust after her. It would be so much easier if someone else partook of the same sin. That's why she kept going. Rather than stop and repent and say, you know what, you're right. It would be so much easier for her to justify the sin having someone else partake of the same sin. So, that's what she does. So she arranges, she figures, well, it must be the fact that the house is full of servants that Joseph is saying no. So she arranges for everybody to be out of the house. And then she makes the ultimate advance. She, at verse 11, it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house therein. So she had arranged for to have all the men of the house out of the house when Joseph got there to work that day. And the wife of Potiphar all but attacks Joseph and tears off his clothes. Of course, the clothes aren't like yours or mine, but she tears off all his clothes and she caught him, verse 12, by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. So naked, he runs out onto the street. And this is the, to her, the ultimate rejection. What worse thing could happen to a woman than to have the best opportunity? You're all alone with a good-looking man. Here's the perfect setting, the perfect opportunity. The man knows that you want him, and you take it. You get him naked, and instead of jumping into bed, he tears off running. So this is the ultimate rejection of her advance. This isn't the first time this has ever happened, by the way. But rejection by one who is loved can quickly turn into hatred. Rejection can really backfire. You can read the whole story in 2 Samuel chapter 13. But verse 15, then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, arise, be gone. So the love that, and he had loved her exceedingly, and because she rejected him and rejected his advance, it turned into hatred, just like that. So here is the same situation. And Potiphar's wife didn't take it very kindly. And she decided she was going to take it out on Joseph. She wasn't going to just let it drop. She was going to get back at him and make him pay for this embarrassment. So, even though the servants, I'm sure, knew exactly what had been happening in all the past months, her trying to get Joseph into bed, her trying making all the sexual advances, but as servants are, they're not going to tell the truth if it jeopardizes their lives, because she, of course, is the woman of the house. So she tells them exactly what they're going to attest to, exactly what the story is. And so she gets the story straight with the men who weren't present to see what happened. And we read in Genesis 39, verse 13, it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, see, he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled, and got him out. So she told the men of the house, the other servants, what they needed to know, what they needed to hear, and what they needed to remember. That was the story that they needed to have in their mind. Well, she knew that that story would fly, because the fact that Joseph was a Hebrew would make the story believable and would make it all just fine. Because Hebrews in Egypt were, there was prejudice against them. In Genesis chapter 43, verse 32, we will get to that point one of these days. But what we're going to find out, for instance, that verse, they set on him by himself, and for them by themselves, and for the Egyptians which did eat with him by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination unto the Egyptians. So to eat with Egyptians eating with Hebrews, the Egyptians thought that to be an abomination. Of course, bad enough that Joseph was a Hebrew, but he, if you remember, was also a shepherd. Genesis 46, verse 34, that ye shall say, the servant's trade hath brought about cattle from our youth, even until now, both we and also our fathers, that we may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians. So Joseph was a double abomination, both a Hebrew and a shepherd. So he had everything going against him if, in fact, there was a bad thing to be said about him. So after getting the story straight with the servants, which of course was an easy task, she waited for her husband to come home from work. And verse 16, she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. Of course, Potiphar is going to believe her rather than believe anything else. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, that she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did the servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph is put into what is the king's prison. Now, this doesn't seem to be a common prison for common criminals. Rather, the prisoners that we're going to find in the king's prison are rather different. A king's prison seems to be a prison with a higher class of prisoners, which it's a good thing for Joseph, because obviously God is looking out for Joseph, and God is working out his purpose through Joseph. So the prison is a special prison. It's a different prison than just your common prison population. But Joseph is put into what is called the king's prison. And Joseph's master, verse 20, took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. So he was put in the prison, and it's hard to say, really. Potiphar's wrath is aroused. Because he has to believe his wife. But the fact that he's put in the king's prison rather than the common population prison, you need to understand that attempted rape of an Egyptian official's wife by a slave would have normally been an offense that would have been punishable by death. And instead, he's put in what would have been a minimum security prison. More of a luxury type of prison rather than the common population prison, and certainly wasn't taken to be killed. So you have to wonder if Potiphar believed her at all, or if any of the other servants spoke to him told him what was really going on. Meanwhile, he is put in prison nonetheless. But God is with Joseph in prison. Verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Once again, it's hard to say why, other than the fact that God was with him. Did Potiphar say something to the keeper of the prison? Was the keeper of the prison familiar with Joseph? We don't know all the details. All the details are not given by Moses, and sometimes God works, as they say, in mysterious ways. But the human element is one that we don't know all the details of the story. But people are involved here, and obviously Potiphar trusted Joseph with everything that was his and had no reason to not trust him other than the story that his wife had told. And there's reason to believe that he that Potiphar may not have fully believed his wife. So, who knows? We, like I say, we read between the lines because as you read about Joseph's prison stay, Joseph is put in charge of the prisoners in the king's prison. Just as he was put in charge of everything in Potiphar's house, Joseph is put in charge of all the prisoners and everything that goes on in the prison. The keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. So Joseph was in charge of all the prisoners, and everything that the prisoners did, Joseph was in charge of that. So this was all within the course of 11 years, and that Joseph rose to the rank of running everything in Potiphar's house, and Potiphar didn't pay even a lick of attention to anything that Joseph was doing as far as running the house, not even counting the money or looking at the bank account. Then he committed offense worthy of death, and rather than death, he was put into a what would have been considered a luxury prison, and basically put in charge of running the prison. The last verse here, the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So even once again, that word shows up. He prospered in prison. So you think, well, how does a person prosper while he's in bonds? How does a person prosper when he's in prison? Well, if a person is to prosper in prison, Joseph certainly did find the way, and because the Lord did work out the details. And here's a guy who's in prison, running the prison, and the keeper of the prison not even paying attention to what he's doing. So Joseph is more in charge than the guy who's supposed to be in charge, which is an amazing thing. Yes.
From one extreme to the other.
From one extreme to the other, exactly right. So when we think about all of these things that went on with Joseph, there are some lessons to learn, and it might change some people's mind about what it means to prosper and when the hand of God actually moves people and is working in people's lives, what that actually means. First of all, when you think about this story of Joseph, the first thing we know is that God was with Joseph throughout his entire life. When his brothers sold him into slavery, God was with Joseph. As a servant or a slave in Potiphar's house, God was with Joseph. In the king's prison, God was with Joseph. Joseph was said to prosper in everything he did. And most people wouldn't associate prospering in any of those situations. And because in any of those situations, Joseph didn't acquire wealth or material goods or anything for himself. Rather, he worked for other people or was in bonds. To read that story and not know it was Joseph, to not know God was with Joseph, but rather to read that someone was sold into slavery, had to serve as a slave, and then was thrown into prison, you would really come to the conclusion that it was because someone had done some kind of great sin in their life and they were being punished rather than they were prospering. That would really be the conclusion that someone would reasonably come to. But yet, the story tells you that Joseph was sold by his brothers because he obeyed his father. His father sent him to check on his brothers to make sure that they were okay, doing what they were supposed to be doing, and that the flocks of sheep were safe. And Joseph obeyed his father, and because he obeyed, he was sold into slavery and taken to Egypt. Joseph was sent to prison, not because he was unrighteous, but because of moral purity. Because he did the right thing. When you think about it, righteous living doesn't always bring ease and good times, does it? Like the Apostle Paul says in 2 Timothy 3:12, yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. People choose not to think about that, but oftentimes it is true. The blessings of God are not always as we wish them to be, and they're not always in black and white. And they don't always come in the form that we want them to be. As I recorded the radio broadcast for this Sunday, I talked about that. And one of the chapters that spells out blessings for the nation of Israel is Deuteronomy chapter 28. And those blessings seem to be very clear, that if you obey God and do the things that God wants you to, then all these blessings will be poured out upon you. But the fact of the matter is, in Deuteronomy, God also says in Deuteronomy chapter 8, to the very same people, he says, thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or not. And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that which he might make thee that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the word mouth of the Lord thy God. Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. Thou shalt also consider in thine heart, that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. And that was for everybody. Not only the ones who didn't believe, but also for the ones who did. Not only for the ones who didn't obey, but also for the ones who did obey. So, yea, all who will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution, isn't only for those of us today, it was for them back then too.
There's an old saying that men have about true hurts. Uh-huh. And it hurts when I throw it at somebody else, it hurts when somebody throws it back at me.
That's exactly right.
That's
Well, when you think about the Lord Jesus Christ, He came and He was also a recipient of the covenant blessings that these same people were counting on, that they were living under. He was born under the law, He was born under the covenant blessings, and yet the author of Hebrews says in Hebrews 5:7, who in the days of His flesh, when He had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto Him who was able to save Him from death, and was heard in that He feared, though He was Son, yet learned He obedience by the things which He suffered, and was made perfect, He became the author of eternal salvation unto all them who obey Him. And you think, well, where was the blessing for the one who obeyed?
There was suffering.
There was the suffering, but where was the blessing for the one who obeyed?
I think it was in there.
Yeah.
In the suffering.
That's right. So when you think about Joseph, and Joseph hadn't done anything wrong. He obeyed his father and got sold into slavery. He was morally correct and got thrown into prison. You know, it's not because of some great sin that he had done that the problems came upon him. But when you think about what is going on in his life, God was always with him and always has been with him to this point. And that's what some people don't always understand, is that even in circumstances that we think are not ideal, if God is with you, then the circumstance is ideal in the eyes of God. Because the years, as far as Joseph is concerned, the years of service of Potiphar prepared Joseph for his years of administration in the second highest office in Egypt under Pharaoh. We're going to read in Genesis 42:23, and they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. You see, those years Joseph learned the Egyptian language when he was in Potiphar's house. It was practical service that he was doing in an Egyptian's house, learning the language. Joseph's imprisonment may very well have been the answer to a prayer. When Joseph prayed, "Save me from this woman, God," and God did the very same thing that Joseph asked. Put him where that woman couldn't get to him. Yeah. And in that very same prison that Joseph is now in, that is where God, that is where Joseph has his interview for his new job. That's where Joseph gets his interview for his new job. So the prison doesn't keep God from using Joseph for his purpose. So it doesn't matter where a person is, what the circumstances are, God can always use those circumstances and that person for His higher purpose. It's just we can't always see that. Psalm 105, starting in verse 17, says, "He sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron until the time that his word came. The word of the Lord tried him, The king sent and loosed him, even the ruler of the people, and let him go free. He made him lord of his house and ruler of all his substance, to bind his princes at his pleasure and teach his senators wisdom. Israel also came into Egypt, and Jacob sojourned in the land of Ham, and he increased his people greatly and made them stronger than their enemies. God used and will use Jacob or Joseph for his purpose, even being in prison, because God is with him.